We're back on KCRW's Good Food. I'm Evan Kleiman. It seems like it's every other day that a new food festival pops up on social media. Some of these events sound incredible, advertising unlimited bites from marquee chefs all in one place. It almost sounds too good to be true. And maybe it is for some business owners.
It really is not so much anger, it's just sadness that chefs feel that, you know, festivals are selling something they're not buying.
Hannah Raskin is a food writer and restaurant critic for the Post and Courier in Charleston. She recently reported on what she calls the, quote, festival industrial complex for the Los Angeles Times and the Southern Foodways Alliance.
It is rare to encounter a chef who isn't juggling festival invitations and obligations.
When I had my restaurants, we participated in many festivals every year. They ranged from events where we gave away bites for free to for-profit gigs where we could sell our wares. Either way, I always wondered if it was worth it. And this was in the day when festivals were one of the few opportunities to get noticed. So I wanted to ask Hannah if the situation had changed. How do festival organizers entice chefs to participate?
You know, it's so interesting. Since I started this reporting, I've had the chance to see some of these emails that they send out. And they always emphasize one of two things, if not both. One, exposure, that you will, you know, have the opportunity to meet thousands of new potential customers. And two, the charitable aims of the organization sponsoring it.
And yet, do chefs feel like they have no choice, that they have to participate?
Very much so. And I think that's the hard thing to explain to folks outside of the industry, because they say, well, just say no. But as we know, F&B is a tight community. And if you decide to say no and everybody else says yes, it often can look like you're not supporting the community, or you're not supporting your fellow chefs, or you're not taking one for the team. So there's that. And there's additionally a feeling amongst chefs that they won't be considered for prestigious awards or for media coverage if they're not there to catch the eye of somebody who's responsible for one or both.
So odd.
Mm-hmm.
So what real perks or not perks, what do chefs get in real life when they participate as opposed to the fantasy of what's dangled in front of them?
Right. So to be clear, there is definitely a division between those chefs who are big celebrities with TV shows. They do get all sorts of things, as consumers might imagine, in terms of pay and luxury hotel rooms and so on. But we're talking about just sort of your everyday chef who might be, you know, in the kitchen of your favorite restaurant. As you said right at the outset, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they did get exposure. They did have the opportunity to show off whatever new thing they've developed. Now, Instagram is a much better forum for that. We have, you know, social media for folks to communicate and stay in touch. And so they also, what was also big at that time were the parties, and the opportunity to drink with your friends was huge. Clearly, you know, we've gone through a shift where the idea of being drunk all the time is no longer seen as not having consequences. So they have both of those things, but they mean less. What they do get, and what they really do get, oftentimes they get a table, sometimes with a tablecloth in order to set out their wares, which they have to provide. In some cases, there is a stipend that can be used toward the cost of ingredients. Again, we're talking about the typical scenario would be like a tasting tent where you have to feed, you know, 800 to 2,000 people. So you might be given usually you've got to bring your own kind of presentation ware, and the festivals will remind you that they are environmentally friendly. So you have to invest in the recyclables. All of that you have to bring, but you get the table. And, you know, if a sponsor has chipped in, you might go home with a bottle of whiskey. You might get a cookbook. That's about it.
Give us an example from someone you spoke with of some of the hard costs that a participating chef at a large festival might incur.
So it breaks down into a number of categories, and I sort of went through this exercise with most of the chefs I interviewed, saying, you know, basically, show me the receipts. Tell me what it is exactly you're spending money on. Travel to the festival site. Again, sometimes money offered toward that, but it almost never covers it, because a chef, if he or she wants to put, you know, their best work forward, usually needs support staff, because in very rare cases is that covered. So we're talking about travel for one, two, or three people, depending on the nature of the event. So, you know, you're talking about like $1,000 right there getting on the plane, Ubering to the site. So you've got that travel expense and you have the lodging expense for the same people we've just mentioned. As I said earlier, usually the chef is on the hook for the cost of the ingredients, which is often the most expensive thing. Additionally, if you're going to a different city to be part of a festival, you probably want to eat while you're there. You know, a chef could save money and just eat peanut butter sandwiches, but it seems like a waste, especially if he or she has brought a crew that, you know, their culinary education is going to matter in the long run. Additionally, you have all the costs of running the restaurant in your absence. Remember, we're focusing primarily on small, you know, independent restaurants. So you need to have someone, you need to hire someone to do your work in addition to paying the wages of whomever you take with you to the festival. And if you're not at home, you can't walk your dog or take care of your kid. So you also have to add in all of the childcare and dog walking services, anything else that needs to happen while you're away. Altogether, it often comes out to ballpark. I mean, it could be, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000.
Or more if the city you're going to is New York.
Absolutely.
Did people feel like they're done?
So that's a really interesting question. I was surprised how many chefs are remaining active in this system, even though they are entirely cognizant of all of the problems. I mean, they're the ones facing the challenges. But they do, first of all, chefs are so isolated on a daily basis. They never get to leave their restaurant. So that does remain an incentive. And they realize that they're undercutting the value of their work by doing it for free or paying to do it. But they really like seeing one another, and which is understandable. They're in the hospitality business. So that's part of it. Part of it, too, is they just don't really see an alternative. So I was really surprised how few chefs said, you know, we need to do away with festivals. They generally seem to think they're good at, you know, getting people excited about food, which is what, you know, we all want to be.
Earlier this week, you held a kind of roundtable at our local bookstore, Now Serving. You and Peter Meehan, food editor of the Los Angeles Times, which has its own month-long festival, talked and then opened the conversation up to the chefs who attended. What were some of the comments that struck you?
I think that there is an overarching concern about this. Not only did the conversation happen there, but I've heard since it continued on as people left. I mean, people really want to figure out how to make this work, but it seems like the consensus is that this prevailing model is fundamentally broken. It sounds to me as though the festivals that are highly luxurious, where, you know, someone mentioned Eric Ripert as a festival in the Cayman Islands, they're like, that's kind of fun. You know, I mean, essentially you're taking a vacation and nobody really seems to complain about these really, really big money festivals. On the other end of the spectrum, these tiny, tiny little festivals that the chefs organize themselves, where perhaps, you know, people put a stand out in front of their actual restaurant, you know, more like a block party, where the sums involved are very, very small. Those also seem to work. But the idea of these kind of festivals we're getting used to, the ones we hear about, the South Beach here in Charleston, these festivals where it's just, you know, more than 100 participants doing more than 100 different things, and the whole thing is put together where they have a budget line for everybody except the chefs, it just doesn't seem to work.
So this weekend, you're presenting some of your findings at the 22nd Annual Southern Foodways Symposium. What do you think is going to come of that?
I don't know. I'm really curious. One of the interesting things is in response to the story, the group of people who have reached out to me most vocally are publicists, which I found really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. So I guess it's really tough for them to advise these chefs. And I think they're watching, you know, the money go out and maybe not come back in. I was fascinated. Again, I work as a reporter, so I'm not usually siding with publicists in any way. And it was really interesting to have all of these publicists just say thank you. So I don't know what's going to come out of this. I mean, ultimately, it would be great if we're able, and when I say we, I don't know who it entails, you know, develop best practices to able to say, look, if this, you're doing the festival this way, you're doing it right or you're doing it wrong sort of thing.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, it certainly shines a light on a whole section of food and beverage throughout the year that most diners have no idea about.
Thank you, Evan. When I started on this project, my concern was that everyone knew all about this, but I'm finding out they don't. So I think, you know, giving consumers an opportunity to think about who's getting paid and how, I just feel really glad that the Southern Foodways Alliance commissioned this work and that you're helping us share it.
Hannah Raskin is the food editor and restaurant critic at the Post and Courier. Her LA Times article was written in partnership with the Southern Foodways Alliance.